Hello, and welcome to another edition of the LinuxQuestions.org podcast. First up, LQ updates. The social networking features that we recently added to LQ and that I mentioned in last week's podcast have gone over extremely well. Based on the feedback, you'll soon be able to easily find members that share similar interests, are using the same distributions, and other things that you might want to find in their member profile. Now, we're still looking for feedback on this and looking for ways that you think that we can improve the social networking aspects of the site. So if you have any feedback, do let us know. I am proud to announce that voting for the 2005 LinuxQuestions.org Members Choice Awards are now open. Now, this is the fifth year that we've done these awards, and turnout has gotten better and better every year by a significant margin. The response from both the community and the award winners has really been fantastic. This year, we have revised some categories a bit based on feedback from last year's awards, and we have also improved the voting logic a little bit. This year, there are going to be 20 categories, and we have included a couple new categories, gotten rid of a couple old ones. An example of one of the new ones is Shell of the Year. Now, voting is going to be open until March 6th, so this is your chance to be heard. Make sure you go and vote. And winners will have the option of picking up their award at the Linux World Conference and Expo in Boston. Next story, I just booked a trip to LA for the upcoming Scale 4. You might remember that LQ is a sponsor of Scale 4. I made this one a fairly short trip, and it looks like I'm going to be in LA for just under 48 hours, so I'm just going to be in and out for the conference. I missed Scale last year, which LQ was also a sponsor of, and it did look like a fantastic show, so I'm glad I'm going to be able to go this year. From the looks of it, I'll actually be attending quite a few conferences this year, and it's always a great experience to get out and talk to similar-minded people, and you just really do learn a ton. So if you do have a chance to attend a show or expo that is in your area, I highly recommend it. If you'll be at Scale 4 and would like to connect, do let me know. And for once, I am actually staying at the conference hotel, so I should be pretty easy to find at this one. Now on to the news. The first story I have is Gubuntu, and what I think of the Google OS. So rumors in this last week or so have been flying around about the Google Desktop Linux. And my take on this is that it's just not going to happen. Not a general OS type release, and definitely not anytime soon. Now, it's obviously no secret that many engineers inside Google do use Linux, and Linux on the desktop even. And as you may know, they even use Linux on a couple of servers. Last time I was at the Googleplex, most of the people were using a Red Hat derivative. I can't remember the exact name of it, and now it looks like it's Ubuntu-based. So why don't I think that Google will release a general-purpose desktop OS, you ask? Well, simple. In my mind, and from Google's perspective, it really just isn't ready for that. If they release this as a general OS and competing with a PC market, then every random game that someone purchased from Walmart or AOL and all kinds of other things that just realistically don't work in Linux would be expected to. Every person that purchased any piece of hardware would expect to plug it in and have things just work, be configured, and that's just not a realistic expectation, I don't think, at this point. Now, is that a knock against Linux? No, definitely not. For what it's meant to do, I think it works phenomenally. I've used Linux on my sole desktop now for many, many years. I don't even remember the last time my main desktop machine wasn't Linux, and I can't imagine going back to Windows, that's for sure. But I don't think I am necessarily in the general OS demographic that the average person's going to be looking at. You know, I'm someone that if I have a problem, I have no qualms about recompiling the kernel to change options and things like that. And that's just not something the average computer user wants or is capable of doing. I think for Linux to compete for Google right now, basically Wine would have to work as well as Rosetta does on the Mac, and it's just not there. Looking at the lack of iTunes alone would enrage millions of people. So what do I think could happen here is that they could come out with a very nice, very Google, very functional appliance, one that was based on Linux and one that utilized the web for the most part. You see, that hits a completely different market segment and demographic than a general OS PC does. A person that buys one of these either may have never owned a computer before or has a computer to take care of those general needs and is buying this for a different reason. The expectation that anything and everything people bought needs to be compatible immediately goes away. It could be cheap, it will be fast, it would have that Google slick factor, and surely it would be reliable. It'd be immune to spyware, you wouldn't have to worry about viruses and malware and other things like that. It would just work. Now, they could probably get this down to, say, the $100 to $200 price range, and that would give you a device that would allow you to browse the web. And remember, they do employ multiple Firefox developers. It would allow you to chat both online and via voice over IP. And remember, they recently hired the main game developer, and obviously they have Google Talk. You could check your email, of course, using Gmail, and perform really a myriad of other online tasks that Google either already offers or could be offering soon. This would really just tie them together into an appliance that would be easy to use and take care of pretty much all the online basics that you would need. Now, it could potentially even have some basic office functionality, and I don't know if that would be via a standard OpenOffice.org, or even more likely, all those rumors that Google was working on a web-based OpenOffice.org derivative could use that. Now, really, in my mind, this would be just step one in the plan. It would lay that seed. It would build the loyal base of Google OS fans, and as Linux got more and more support, and more hardware support, and more and more mindshare from a desktop perspective, as soon as it was ready for the prime time, Google would already be in the market. They'd already be ready, and then they could plan a general PC, general OS release. Hardware manufacturers at that point would have a reason to support Linux. You know, the power of Google branding here really could be utilized. A lot of hardware manufacturers at this point aren't willing to support Linux because they claim it doesn't have a big enough market share. And the fact that it doesn't have the hardware support is obviously impacting the fact that it can't get that market share. So the Google name behind it really, I think, would change a lot of hardware vendors' perspectives. Now, one interesting thing here that I see is that, in my opinion, this really should worry Novell and, probably to a lesser extent, Red Hat at least as much as it worries Microsoft. The desktop market is a huge piece of the potential OS pie. And a move by Google like this could pretty much all but lock out the Linux-based options. So if they took the lion's share of the desktop Linux market, that would leave very much for Novell to take over. And with Red Hat pretty much having the enterprise side of things locked up pretty nice right now, that would put a couple vendors in a pretty tight spot. The fact that this is all based on a non-RPM distro even makes this all the more interesting. So it's not something I think is going to happen soon. And like I said, I definitely don't think it's going to be a general release, but it should be interesting kind of with all the other Google rumors going on at this time, from the censorship in China to the stock price falling to a couple other things. It's going to be interesting to see in the next 6 to 12 months how this plays out. The next story I have is React OS suspends development for source code review. And recently, the React OS team, I think this was announced on the 27th of January, has suspended development to do a code review. And this was amid concerns that stolen code from Windows could have leaked into the project. For those of you not familiar with React OS, it's about a 10-year-old project that's also in a way tied with Wind that aims to create a functional, gratis, open-source version of Windows NT. Now, they suspended development after a meeting to discuss whether leaked code could have been or had been added to the project's code base. One interesting thing here is that the OS has stopped all downloads while developers perform this full audit, and it's about 3 million lines, they say, in the code base right now. So the fact that you won't be able to download it until they're done means that for a significant amount of time, there's going to be zero downloads. Stephen Edwards, who was recently elected as the React OS project coordinator, had this to say. Quote, "Leaks of parts of the source code for Windows 2000 and Windows NT have been circulating on the internet for a few years, but there is nothing in the code base that we believe is a copy and paste from a leaked bad source. We just want to standardize our practices in the clean room method to make sure we can't get sued down the line. So, just to be sure of that, we're going to audit the code base." End quote. So you really have to give kudos to the entire React OS team on this, and that's really whether or not you agree with the project goals or not. A lot of open source advocates don't like projects like this because they claim hey, why is Adobe or any of the major software manufacturers going to port to Linux when they can just hope that someday Wine will work perfectly and they can just continue writing Windows-only software and they'll get other OSs because of projects like this. And of course, the flip side is people want these applications and they're not going to move to Linux till they work. So if Adobe doesn't do it, hey, let's get more people to use Linux by allowing them to run their apps. It really is a tough question that it's easy to see both sides of this one. The fact that they are taking the time and expending what is significant amount of effort to make sure things are done correctly and by the book, I really think this is how things should be. And the fact that they're completely stopping downloads in the meantime means that they're really willing to do this right and not cut corners. Now, what they're basically looking to do here is implement the following four items. Number one is to amend their intellectual property policy statement to reflect clean room reverse engineering as meaning the U.S. standard method for reverse engineering. One of the items that came up is because there's so many different contributors from so many different countries, the meaning of clean room reverse engineering may have been different depending on the laws of that country, and what they want to do is standardize on the U.S. standard. Number two is to, as I mentioned, audit the entire source tree and rewrite any and all code found to have been implemented not using the U.S. method for reverse engineering. Number three is to require all developers contributing major code to accept the terms of the IP policy document via a signature. And the last one, which I think they added at a later time more recently, was that any developer that had access to leaked code is banned from contributing code to the project for any of the modules that are the same as leaked source code they examined. So I do wish them luck on this endeavor and look forward to one be able to be downloaded again. The final story I have for you is, will OpenSolaris and Linux soon be trading code? And I noticed this article in eWeek. Now, I'll be doing a little bit more on this one probably in the next podcast or possibly on my blog, but I just wanted to make a quick comment on this. Really, how ironic would it be if Sun went ahead and released OpenSolaris under the GPL version 3? As I mentioned in last week's podcast, there's a good chance that the Linux kernel will never be released under version 3. So at that point, Sun will be able to say, hey, after all the hemming and hawing and complaining, we GPL'd the code. The fact that it still can't be commingled with Linux code, that's not our fault. We did what we could. So how much would Jonathan Schwartz love that one? That's all I have for now, but thanks for listening. And remember, if you like the LQ podcast, please head over to podcastdaily.com and vote for us.